Well, here we are, the 18th of September, and well, it's a lucky day. 18 is a very lucky number, and it's our third edition of Biz News Briefing. And today we have our very first live in-studio guest. I've been pre-recording everything up to now, as you do when you try and reduce the risk. But here's David Bacher. David, it's fantastic to have you in the studio with us tonight. You and I talk often. We talk every month with the Corian Report. What is it that you guys do at Corian, just for those who perhaps haven't come across Mr. Bacher before?
Well, to put it as plain as simple, we try and simplify the world of investing. We look after people's pension funds, their savings, and we try and do it in a way that we communicate what happens in the investment world in a simple and understandable manner.
Magic. Well, tonight we're going to be simplifying a lot of stuff, I'm sure, but to just give you a feel of the rundown before we talk about the markets, and in South Africa, there was a red day, but nothing terribly sad about it. Not a hectic decline. To give you the overall progress on national health insurance, I did manage to speak today to the incoming chief executive of Business Unity South Africa, who met yesterday along with his team with the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, on national health insurance. So that's pretty good news that there is at last jaw-jaw rather than war-war, which we've had for so long on that issue. We've got high-tech attacks in the Middle East, pager explosions. We will hear from our colleagues at, well, our partners rather, at Bloomberg, exactly what's going on there. And then a wonderful segment from a keynote address to the BizNews conference by Piet Viljoen. It's all about Lollapalooza, and we will get to that in a little while. Piet will be giving us some insights on it. David and I will have a chat about Grindrod, the Rand at 12 months highs, exactly what Lollapalooza means, and trading updates today from Southern Sun, Robex, and Metair. And then we will look at the big move on the solar side from our partners at the Financial Times of London, and that is the move out of wind into solar, so by BP, a global giant. And we'll have some suggestions or comments, rather, from members of the BizNews community on that. And then ahead of talking about the markets, we'll get some information on how the Americans are viewing the next big thing, which is the interest rate cut coming from the Federal Reserve this afternoon. So plenty for you in tonight's program. But let's start off on national health insurance. David, I don't know if you've been following this subject very closely, but people in South Africa, in the business community, and also in the investment community, are a little concerned that national health insurance is going to bankrupt the country as it is, if it were allowed to go ahead. However, there are so many court cases that are lined up. If it ever, in its current form, were to be implemented, it'd be something of a miracle.
Yes, well, I think, let me take a step back and start with the following. I think the objective of NHI at its core is hard to disagree on. I mean, eradicating the inequalities and providing, you know, equitable access to quality healthcare services for all South Africans is surely what we all want and would like to strive toward. However, having said that, I agree there are some real concerns about the sustainability of funding, potential inefficiencies, administration burden, and really the questionable track record of the delivery of our government. So it's nice to hear that business is engaging with government, and the rhetoric that's come out of the press conference yesterday seems to be encouraging. And hopefully, you know, and certainly in my opinion, you know, government and the private sector should try and address this together and come up with a realistic solution for all.
Well, let's hear what Kulikane Mahe, the Deputy Chief Executive of Business Unity South Africa, had to say about that meeting with the President, the meeting with by Buza with the President which happened yesterday.
The president did grant us an audience as business to table the concerns that we have been raising in the past about the National Health Insurance Act. We met on Tuesday the 17th, yesterday. The meeting was scheduled as an hour-long meeting, which it was. And so in a sense, it precluded the possibility of discussing detailed proposals and detailed suggestions of how we address some of the concerns. And rather, we really just discussed process of how we move forward. As it relates to the NHI, this is the first opportunity we have to meet with the president. And so we are very happy about that. The president requested business to provide proposals on the very concerns that we've raised, because the president is clearly keen on us moving forward rather than being stuck on problems. So he said, give me proposed solutions. On the basis of the proposed solutions, we can then decide how we treat those, how we engage in detail around those proposals. So in many ways, the ball is in our court as business to then provide the detailed proposals to the president.
So that's from Kulikani, and very useful insights there. David, just from your side, I see we're getting quite a lot of feedback or comments on the live stream that the guys can't hear you too well. So I think try and get a little close if you can to your computer and maybe shout into it, whatever we need to do. But this whole thing on NHI, if you unpack it, South Africa is looking at a trillion rand plus potential expense, which kind of gets per annum, that is, kind of gets us into a situation of la-la land. We can't afford it.
That I think it is a significant funding issue for the government. And the only way in my eyes, and I'm by no means an expert in the sector, is for some kind of a private partnership and to work very closely with government, with private institutions in South Africa, which have a good history of providing, albeit for, I would say, not the whole of our population, good healthcare and hospital services. So I look back at the meeting that they had with government quite in a positive manner. At least there's dialogue now, and hopefully a broader government stroke private discussions and partnership going forward will see better healthcare for all, but in a sustainable manner that doesn't put our finances and the country at further risk.
Our guest commentator this evening is David Bacher. I'm Alec Hogg, and you're with the Biz News Briefing. Well, all around the world, the big story of the day was high-tech attacks in the Middle East. There's a lot of confusion about how this happened, but Hezbollah members, more than a dozen of them, had explosives somehow put into their pages. Let's hear what our partners at Bloomberg make about all of this.
In the Middle East, Hezbollah, the Lebanese government, and Iran are all blaming Israel for a wave of pager explosions that killed at least a dozen people, including two children, and wounded close to 2,800. Bloomberg's Jumana Bersetchi has more from Dubai.
What this constitutes is an embarrassing security breach for Hezbollah. It is the biggest security breach ever. And lots of people were saying, what were these operatives doing walking around with pagers anyway?
Bloomberg's Jumana Bersetchi and Secretary of State Antony Blinken says it's not clear what impact the attack is going to have on the Iran-based militant group or its operations.
The United States did not know about, nor was it involved in, these incidents, and we're still gathering the information and gathering the facts.
Secretary Blinken speaking there from Cairo, where he's involved in ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Blinken says the U.S. has stressed the need to avoid escalation.
Well, that's very interesting developments on that side. We're going to move into the BizNews conference event now. And you would have recalled that earlier this week, we heard from the chairman of Eskom, Mteto Nyati, who was, for many people, deserving of a standing ovation. We heard from Franz Cronier yesterday, who opened the event. And now we're going to listen in to Piet Viljoen, who introduced the BizNews tribe to a concept called Lollapalooza. Here's Piet.
Within this hall sits the core of the BizNews community. And I think if you look around, you'll find a lot of people you don't agree with. You'll have different points of views on different things. But the one thing all of us in this room can agree on is that we are looking for that Lollapalooza investment. The one that knocks your socks off. A 10-bagger in no time at all. A ridiculously good investment. That's what we all want. Charlie Munger defined a Lollapalooza event as a confluence of different factors that come together that result in a huge nonlinear outcome, either positive or negative. Could be either. But that's what a Lollapalooza event is, and that is what we are looking for in investment terms. But these things are scarce, like unicorns. They are to find. So how do we find these things? GMO, Grant and Meyer Van Otterloo, the New York-based, value-based investment company. There are very few of these left, but they are one of them. They, according to their metrics, deep value is one of the cheapest situations in the world right now. And they define deep value as stocks that are trading at a big discount to intrinsic value, but they don't include cyclical stocks or what they call value traps, you know, the classic cigar butt, the one puff and you're done type of stock. They look at good businesses that are trading at a discount to their intrinsic value or fair value, and they say that cohort of assets relative to the market is the cheapest it has ever been. But nobody owns value stocks, and they certainly don't own deep value stocks. South African equities, or small and mid-cap equities, is another special case of this deep value quality cohort of stocks. No one owns them. South African mid and small cap stocks have been subject to consistent selling pressure over the past decade as South African investors have moved their money offshore, withdrawing from local funds, forcing the fund managers to sell what they have and what they have of those stocks, and then buying Nvidia on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Now, I'm often asked, so America's done, the American stocks have done so well for so long, South African stocks have done so badly for so long, what could change this? So let's take a step back and look at the dynamics of how the market is put together at this point in time. The USA is 26% of global GDP. Yet, US stocks make up 63% of the MSCI All Country World Index. I don't think it's a stretch to say that US stocks are possibly overrepresented in a broad index you might buy today. On top of that, our numbers show that the US dollar is one of the most overvalued currencies in the world. And at some point, that will come home to roost. So investors in a broad index of global stocks have massive exposure to expensive US stocks and an expensive US currency. The BRICS nations make up 28% of global GDP on a purchasing power parity basis. It's 29% on a purchasing power basis, about 36%. That's just BRICS. If you add other large emerging markets like Malaysia, Philippines, Thailand, some other South American countries, Eastern European countries, it's closer to 50% of global GDP is made up of emerging economy GDP. Do you want to know what the weight of emerging markets is in the MSCI All Country World Index? 13%. A huge part of the global economy is not in the index. South Africa is 3% of the emerging markets combination. So in global terms, we're about 0.3%. Global investors have a functional equivalent of zero exposure to South Africa at this point in time. Let's have a look at South African investors. Well, they've been doing three things over the past 10 years. First of all, they have been running offshore, taking all their assets offshore as quickly as they can. because we are a corrupt country run by communists, guaranteed to fail, we have no electricity, and so on and so forth. Fear sells. It's been easy for advisors to tell you to take your money offshore because it makes logical sense. But I think we've seen this morning already that things are changing. But in any case, so that's one thing South African investors have been doing. They've been taking their money offshore. Number two, they've been indexing, which is a rational strategy. There's nothing wrong with indexing. The only problem in South Africa is that the index consists of a hodgepodge of randomly selected companies that happen to be listed in South Africa, offshore companies that happen to be listed in South Africa. Companies like BHP Billiton, Glencore, British American Tobacco, Richemont, and so on and so forth. These companies which dominate the South African index have no exposure to South Africa. So to the extent you buy the offshore index, you are taking your money offshore. And the third thing that South African investors have been doing is they've been risk managed by the consultants, the risk managers, the asset consultants, and the DFMs into the large funds of Coronation, 91, Allan Gray. Now, if the Orsha Index is vanilla, these three big managers are Essence of Vanilla, Vanilla Crunch, or Vanilla Flake. It's all vanilla. They have no choice. They are so big, they have to buy the index. And when you buy the index, you end up with a hodgepodge of randomly selected offshore stocks. I would argue today, South African investors in the aggregate have the functional equivalent of zero exposure to South African stocks.
That's quite hectic, isn't it? Functional exposure of zero to South African stocks, David. You heard what Pete had to say there. What we didn't add was that he gave us a Lollapalooza, well, two others, and this one. So you'll have to go on to the BizNews TV channel and go and watch that full keynote. But a Lollapalooza being a ridiculously good investment, and he puts South African small and mid-caps into that category. What's your thought on that one, Dave?
Well, firstly, let me just say I like listening to Pete. He always shares his views in a passionate manner, never shy of an opinion. And in this occasion, not all occasions, I don't think we could disagree on any of the points he raised. I mean, I mentioned this in our last interaction. The fact that South African retirement funds have been taking their money offshore for so long and that the foreign exchange regulations that govern our pension funds have increased from 10% a decade and a bit ago to 45%, mean there's been a natural seller of South African assets. Also, and I agree with the point of the consultants in the industry really not backing smaller institutions, boutique institutions, because the brands of the bigger houses out there, the likes of a 91, the Allan Gray, et cetera, you know, are well-respected big companies, which is, you know, investors see comfort in the herd. And that has been a disabler in terms of South African investors actually taking a contrarian view. Those bigger houses have to invest offshore. Their assets are too big to actually make meaningful investments in South Africa. So long story short, I think valuations in South Africa has been compelling. At Corin, we've been building up a position for some time. It took a bit longer than we expected. But, you know, we go where we see value, and South Africa in our eyes shows a lot of value.
South Africa Inc. in particular, and I guess that was the big thing where he talks about if you buy South Africa's all-share index, you're getting so many companies that have got very little, limited, if any, exposure to the South African market. So you've got to be cautious about where you invest if you want part of the South Africa story, which the turnaround really was to do with the government of national unity and sustainable electricity. Where have you been finding them, Dave?
Well, I think the fact that our market is quite constrained in terms of the number of counters you can invest into leads a lot of people to go to the bigger caps. We have been finding a lot of value in the mid caps in the South African Inc. story. You look at even bigger shares like Absa, who's been trading at a dividend yield of of 9%. I mean, that's unheard of in its history. And obviously, it's a big company, it's got its issues, etc. But a 9% large cap company, a 9% dividend yield from a large cap company is compelling. And you can go mid caps, you go small caps, but you can even, as I've just said, go to big banks like South Africa, where you are likely, relative to history and its valuations, to get good returns going forward.
Well, we're going to move on now to the Financial Times' inputs on solar and this big story, which is a move away by BP from the massive investment that it's got in wind farms onto solar energy. Let's hear from our partners at the Financial Times.
BP has put its $2 billion U.S. onshore wind business up for sale. It wants to focus on solar energy instead. The pivot is a sign of growing excitement about solar in the U.S. And here to discuss is the FT's energy editor, Malcolm Moore. So before we talk about this broader shift, first, can you give me the details about what BP is doing here?
Yeah, so BP owns all or part of 10 wind farms in the US, and they're basically exiting the whole business. They're saying that they don't want to be in onshore wind anymore. And the reason they've given is that they want to focus on a company called Lightsource, which they're in the process of buying. And Lightsource is primarily a solar energy company. It's an interesting move because, you know, these wind farms, they're up, they're operational, they're making money, they're connected to the grid. Whereas solar, it's a very competitive landscape. But on the other hand, you can see that if they think they're not going to install any more wind and grow that portfolio significantly, then maybe solar is the place where you can see a lot of growth.
And Malcolm, why would a company like BP be interested in solar right now? Like, just how popular is it getting?
So basically, just looking at the next phase, people are expecting that over the next 10 years or so, there's going to be significantly more solar installed in the US than there is wind. Wind is currently about 10% of the US power generation capacity, and solar is about 4%. But we're going to see solar catch up really quickly. Solar is just easier to do. If you think about a wind farm, firstly, they're big. You've got to import them. You've got to install them. You've got to get the permits for them. All of that is kind of tricky. And it's kind of an established industry. So all the places where there's a lot of wind, there are already quite a lot of wind farms. So there's kind of a natural slowdown in the growth there. Whereas in solar, they're relatively unobtrusive. People don't protest against new solar panels going up. And they're kind of cheap and they're not difficult to install.
You know, this seems like a really big turnaround for solar.
If you rewind to 15 years ago, back then, wind power was seen as the great hope of the transition because the costs were coming down, turbines were going up everywhere, people had found a business model that worked, and people were installing wind farms. At that time, solar was seen as incredibly expensive and something that was going to really be difficult to scale. And then suddenly, they worked out how to make these panels very cheaply, and they have the lowest cost of electricity generation while the sun is shining out of any energy form out there. And actually, you kind of need both, right? Because sometimes the best times for wind farms are at night. And that's, of course, when solar panels don't work.
We've got some pretty active WhatsApp groups amongst the BizNews premium members. And as this is a big story with BP moving out of the wind farms into solar, I thought I'd ask a couple of the regular contributors to the energy group to give us their insights. Let's start with Zipo Buthelezi.
BP is the subsidiary company called BP Solar. I remember when I was at university, I was reading about that company that producing the photovoltaic panels as early as the 1980s, if I'm not mistaken. I think 1981 to be specific. I remember very well BP Solar was the largest photovoltaic manufacturer in the United States at that time before they shut it down in 2010. And they even made a bit of the PVs at that time. And their main factory was owned by Amco and Enron before BP. And then Amron, you know, things happened there in the 90s. So my question with regards to BP moving to solars now is it because their move is genuine, or is it because of the pressure that came with the Gulf disaster that happened a couple of years ago?
And here's the thoughts from Witse Post, who's also an active member of that BizNews Energy WhatsApp group.
BP and Eskom want to get into solar and batteries because it's now very cheap to produce solar energy, store it and sell it into high demand and high tariff periods of the day. The batteries are very cheap now, which is a game changer. Meanwhile, wind power onshore or offshore is still more complicated. Solar on rooftops are expanding rapidly, which means that the grid demand is going down, and ultimately there will be nobody on the grid to actually take the energy. Thus, whether it's solar or wind farms, they're likely to be cannibalized by rooftop solar. This means that in a decade or so, BP, looking back on their investment in light source, may not think it to have been such a wise decision.
And to close off this segment, I asked Andrew Middleton, who's the chief executive of Go Solar. That's the biggest installer of solar panels amongst residential households in South Africa, to give us his thoughts on the big move by BP.
The move by BP highlights what we've seen as a global trend, where solar energy, given the investment in it, is the fastest growing energy source in the world globally today. And that's really driven by cost. Huge advancements in scale in the technology has meant that solar energy can produce electrons cheaper than any other source of power during the day. Now, that's important because daytime has always been the limitation of solar, but because of the advancements in battery storage, we can now see solar energy being stored, being produced cheaply during the day and stored for the peaks in the mornings and evenings. If you combine that with other great technologies such as wind, you can then have a mix of renewable energy sources, solar, wind, battery, that can become a baseload source of power. And that's why we've seen such big companies focus on this, because solar will be very key to the energy transition coupled with energy storage.
Some pretty cool insights there, not just from our partners at the Financial Times, but also the BizNews community and Go Solar's chief executive, Andrew Middleton. David, have you got solar on your roof?
I do not. I looked at installing it, funny enough, quite recently, and then given the good run of our Eskom capacity and deliverance over the last few months, I paused the implementation. But it's something that I think, you know, all people need to consider going forward. And I think it's only a matter of time that I do implement it.
Well, I'm a Go Solar client, and I'm very happy with the service that I get because actually it also has cut my electricity bill quite significantly. But I must admit, it's 175, I think, today is days without load shedding. So we are moving in the right direction on a lot of fronts. The Rand as well. And the Rand is now at a 12-month high. What's behind this? Is it all to do with electricity and the government of national unity?
I think it's a lot of things. That is certainly an important driver of what has happened. Our Rand has strengthened relative not just to the dollar, but we've actually appreciated year to date more than the majority of emerging currency. So it's not just a weak dollar, it definitely is a strong rand, and the government of national unity is certainly one driver. And I think the other driver is Eskom. I mean, Eskom was a major constraint for growth. A country that doesn't grow is always going to be under pressure. Growth and earnings drives investments and drives capital flows. So those two factors have definitely been the catalyst of what we are reaping at the moment. I mean, if you look a year ago to the day, the Rand was at, I think, 1910. You know, it's now closer to 1750, 1756. That's a substantial appreciation. So we're looking good.
Indeed. Okay, let's get on to the movements in the markets today. And there was a big announcement out of Grindrod. The chief executive was running around, so we were hoping to get a word or two from him tonight. Not possible, but it is a 1.3 billion rand deal to do with the operation in Mozambique. And I remember when they first went in there, it wasn't met with universal acclaim But it's been a heck of an investment for Grindrod getting into the port of Maputo.
It has. And I mean, can we not look at this story as a blueprint for what can be done in South Africa? I mean, the acquisition of the Matola terminal by Grindrod has significantly also benefit Mozambique. I mean, Grindrod has committed to spending a lot on its on the infrastructure and capacity. And such investments have implications for the broader economy. And not only does it create jobs, but it definitely improves logistics and increases export capacity. So it's been proved to be a great investment from Grindrod, but also shows what can be done in South Africa, where, you know, you privatize assets that the country really needs to grow its economy.
Okay, David, sorry about this. We're getting more feedback from people. Would you just mind closing your computer? And I'm sure that the echo will stop then. If you can just, you know, switch off the Riverside link that you've got. Thank you. Okay, I'm sure that's going to work. My apologies.
Well, it's nice always to be the first, usually, but maybe not in this case. So hopefully we grow our technology.
No, we're learning as we go along. Clayton Christensen said that the innovator is the one who starts and then improves as they get better. There's a very sophisticated piece of technology that we've got here. And anyway, we are moving in the right direction. But thank you, everyone, for your tolerance. And I'm sure that the echo has now disappeared. Just getting on to the – it says that's better already. Thanks, Victor. Big thumbs up. Okie doke. Pitts Lollapalooza. We didn't really get a chance to talk about that in much detail. Have you been to the Berkshire Hathaway AGM?
It's one of my great regrets that I haven't been able to do that. I obviously follow the podcast and the YouTube and read the reports where I can. I know you're a big fan and gone there, but it's definitely something that I need to hopefully address pretty soon.
But I love that point about, I think it Pitt said that Charlie Munger actually created the word. I'm not sure if that's true, but it is something that is now used a lot in investment parlance about finding those incredibly good investments. Would you put South Africa in a Lollapalooza phase? The South African, and we really have to look at the mid and small caps, the SA Inc. shares, if you like.
I think we are still there. We've got to also take into account that we have had a good rally over the last a few months. So maybe if you asked that question a few months ago, I probably would have been a hell yes. Right now, I certainly think relative to other markets, we are attractive. But, you know, it's very easy for investors to go from one camp to the other. I mean, 3 months ago, we had some real risks. We had some risks to our fiscus. Those risks don't disappear straight away. And these small and mid caps don't operate in an island. They are affected by big macro drivers and issues. Those issues are still apparent. But having said that, to answer your question, yes, South Africa is a investment destination that is showing great value and shouldn't be ignored.
Well, today's markets, the All Share Index down by about 0.33%, the top 40 down by about 0.5%. Financials backed the trend. They were up slightly about 0.25%, and resources down 1.5%. So not a heck of a lot to write home about on the major indices. The Rand firmer again, 17.55 rand. That's a 3 cents gain against the US dollar. Bitcoin, after surging through $60,000 yesterday, back to $59,500 today. So we've had every day is an interesting day when it comes to stock markets, David, and I'm sure you'd agree with that. But looking at the individual changes that there have been, or the news that came out, yesterday we had good financial results from Altura. It went up 8%. Today it's up again 2.5%. Is that the kind of reaction that should be justified? In other words, is it almost like on the results, people buying and then reassessing and actually finding, whoa, there's even more value.
Yeah, I mean, the announcement of results is obviously a very important catalyst for investors to decide if they should buy or sell. You don't usually get such a big reaction. So what that is telling you is that the market expected earnings per share at a certain level or an outlook that was set at a certain dynamic. But what was reported on was above those expectations and well above those what the market was expecting. So an 8% move means that the company really did something that the market wasn't expecting on the upside, and that was a result that drives such an appreciation.
MetAir, it brought out a trading statement today. The big news, I guess, was telegraphed a bit earlier that they're selling out of their Turkish operation. You've got to wonder what South Africans think that they can, or how many South Africans have actually think where they're going to be successful, where so many other companies from this country haven't. And we don't have a good track record as a nation in going into international jurisdictions.
We certainly don't, and this is just another story to add to that. I mean, MetAir, I've had a torrid time specifically in Turkey, where they have had some significant macroeconomic challenges, hyperinflation in Turkey. And as a result, I mean, their share price, I think over the last 5 years, has actually gone backwards. It's I think, down about 35% over a five-year period. So not a great outcome for investors. I suppose they have now, in the announcement, declared that they are disposing of their investments in Turkey. Maybe that would be the start of focusing on markets that are probably where they have a better competitive advantage. But having said that, they operate in many jurisdictions around Europe and around the world. So it's not going to be easy to turn this around, we don't think. But maybe this is the start.
We did mention a little earlier the news flow coming out of Grindrod, and that the market loved. It was at about 10:30 this morning. It was trading at 14 Rand and 75 cents. Ended the day at 15 and a half, so 15 Rand 50, a big improvement from where it had got to at one point. There was also some trading update or an update from Southern Sun. Occupancies at the hotel group edging higher from 55% to 57%. Sorry, 55.9% to 57%, so not really that much. The hotel sector has been under pressure for a heck of a long time. Are you seeing any improvement there, given that South Africa as a whole does seem to be lifting its head?
We do, and you can see that in the share price over the past year. Southern Sun is up about 45%, so you can see that that is a sign that the company is turning around. I think what makes it different, let's compare our hotel occupancy now to pre-COVID. It's a different world. So, pre-COVID, I think in South Africa, hotel occupancy was at about 68%. We're well below that as an industry. And as you pointed out, Southern Sun reported, I think it was 57% hotel occupancy. So the market still has to go quite a way to catch up to where it was 5 years ago. But I think the dynamic, what I was suggesting that has changed, is a lot of these companies also relied on business travel. Like City Lodge came out with announcements a week ago. And business travel is down significantly from 5 years ago for the likes of Teams and Zoom and the ability to interact remotely. So it still has challenges, but at least hotel occupancy is on the up. And that's predominantly driven by increased tourism in South Africa.
And David, as far as the construction sector is concerned, we had a trading update from Robex, a construction company that does seem to be doing better than most. Was there anything to read into that?
Yeah, I think Robex is a great indicator for the country. I mean, it is one if not the leading infrastructure development and construction company in South Africa. It listed on the JSE, I think, in 2007. And, you know, what this country needs is good investments in CapEx and infrastructure. So when Robex is doing well, hopefully it's a sign of reinvestment in South Africa. And they reported headline earnings per share will increase between 45% and 55%, a very well-run company, trading at a price-to-earnings ratio of 11, which I think, given its history, is not that demanding. And the share price has reflected, you know, those results. So share prices follow earnings. And if your earnings are up 45% to 55% as they're reporting, then your share price will follow. And their share price has, I think, doubled year to date. So very good story coming out of Rubex.
Indeed, from 28 Rand at the beginning of the year to 55 Rand 50 today, and an improvement on the day of nearly 2%. So it is good news when you see the construction shares picking up, and also Robex being one of the darlings of that sector, especially if you happen to have bought the shares at the beginning of the year. David, we're going to close out with a clip now from our partners at Bloomberg, who are looking ahead to the afternoon in the United States. Remember, it's the morning in the US right now. So let's have a listen to what Bloomberg is thinking, or what their experts are thinking about the big interest rate decision by the Federal Reserve a little later.
The trading day is underway on Wall Street, but the main event is this afternoon in Washington. That is the sound of the opening bell from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And at the open, stocks are just a bit higher. The S&P 500 opens higher by a tenth of 1%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, that's little change to the upside. And the NASDAQ Composite opens with a gain of 0.2%. The 10-year Treasury yield up about 3 basis points to close to 3.68%. All this ahead of one of the most hotly anticipated Fed decisions in years. The Federal Reserve is expected to deliver its first interest rate cut in 4 years at its September meeting this afternoon. But whether policymakers cut a little or a lot, that's the big question. The smart money is saying this debate's getting overheated.
I mean, they're going to do it, you know, 25, 50 basis points. Not going to be earth-shattering.
That was J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. Bloomberg's Michael McKee has more on what Fed policymakers are saying.
Well, I would have said it's a guaranteed 25 basis points. They didn't give us any reason to think differently before they went into the quiet period 10 days ago. Then we had a couple of newspaper articles that appeared to be leaks from the Fed late last week, suggesting it was a close call. So the raises the possibility that perhaps Jay Powell was counting noses and thought maybe he could get a 50 basis point cut out of it, and that might be the right thing to do.
Bloomberg's Mike McKee in Washington, where the Fed decision will come down this afternoon at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. Our coverage begins at 1:30.
Indeed it does. It sounds a little bit like a rugby match, doesn't it, Dave? They're going to cross to the event half an hour before so that they can comment on it and the big news that comes out. Jeepers, finance has become so interesting when it's gone mainstream like that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I was watching a YouTube clip about people watching the NVIDIA results with popcorn in a theater, I think in China somewhere. I mean, that's what our markets have become. And there's no bigger day than US interest rate announcements. So I know my team, as soon as the announcement comes out, starts sending their thoughts and their views. And so, yeah, it's I don't know if it's healthy. I certainly don't think it adds too much value over the long term. But interest rates are very powerful short-term movers. You expect a bit of volatility tomorrow. That generally happens when interest rates are announced, and certainly much more volatility if there's any surprises to interest rate announcements.
David Bacher is with Corient Capital, and thank you, David, for your contribution tonight. Until the next time, I'm Alec Hogg. Cheerio.